Welcome to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. If you've traveled to the site of the Wounded Knee Massacre, you've likely found the historic interpretation of events there to be oral, not written. In other words, someone may or may not be waiting to tell you a story, show you some pictures, offer you a list of names. Newspaper publisher Tim Gallego is hoping to add another dimension to Wounded Knee, a history museum, a trade pavilion for Native artists, a visitor center. But first, he needs more than $3 million to buy 40 acres of land adjacent to the site, and he's asking for your help. Tim Gallego joins us now from the South Dakota Public Broadcasting Studio in Rapid City. Tim, welcome to Dakota Midday.
Yeah, good morning, Lori.
I want to start by asking you about your earliest memories of growing up near Wounded Knee Creek and near the cemetery there.
Well, people are talking about building anything on or near Wounded Knee, but a trading post was built there in the 1920s and stood there and served the people around Wounded Knee with the grocery store, gas station, and everything up until it was destroyed in 1973. It was built by Clive and Agnes Gildersleeve. Agnes was an Ojibwe Indian from Minnesota. And the property was sold to Jim Krasinski in 1968. And he was the owner of the trading post when it was destroyed. And I think a lot of people don't understand or realize that that's 43 years of business that he lost. And there's no telling what amount of income he lost during all of that time. Wounded Knee used to be a place where my father worked in the trading post. A lot of the local residents came and brought their beadwork and arts and craft. Sold it to the trading post. The trading post, in turn, had busloads of people and tourists come down and visit weekly, and they bought the arts and crafts that the locals had created, and it was a job producing and income for the local people. It's been there a long time.
And you were a small boy during that time. That's where you grew up, right?
Yes, I lived at Wounded Knee when I was a boy, and my father worked there. In fact, my sister was born there.
Did you play around that area, around the creek there?
My playmate was Joanne Gildersleeve, the only child and the daughter of Clive and Agnes. And she had a tricycle, and one of the things we did was just ride that tricycle up and down the sidewalks in front of the Wounded Knee Trading Post when we were very little.
Yeah. What was your awareness of the history of that place then as a young boy?
Well, I think probably the only thing that made it seem like a very special place is there was benches out in front of the trading post, and a lot of the elders would sit out there and smoke cigarettes and just talk and visit, and every now and then they'd turn and point up at the graveyard up on the hill. And as a little boy, I used to sit there and watch them. And when I was little, I'd walk along Wounded Knee Creek and while I was playing, and it was almost as if I could hear children crying. I think those are my earliest memories of what happened there.
And did you have an understanding at that point of who those children were and
no,
what those voices?
I was much too young then. And, you know, the odd thing is people, we weren't taught a lot of that in school. I went to school probably 10 miles from Wounded Knee. I went to school at the Holy Rosary Indian Mission Boarding School. And on December the 29th, 1890, my grandmother was working at the Holy Rosary Mission, and she saw the soldiers ride on to the mission grounds chasing stragglers. So she was a part of that history, and that's in my lifetime. So it hasn't been that long ago.
No. When do you remember first thinking that this is something that you wanted to purchase and change the future of? As an adult?
Well, you know, I've always regarded Wounded Knee as a very sacred place. And I also know that the land itself, the 40 acres, does not include, a lot of people think this, but it does not include the grave site where the mass grave, it includes the land that is adjacent to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always felt that It's a historic place. It is now a National Historic Site, and it needs to be, I think, developed so that there's a cultural museum. I would call it a Holocaust museum because of the people that died there in what was in essence a case of genocide.
Before we get to the cultural museum impact and any development, let's talk about the land purchase itself, because my understanding is that has to come first. Where are you at in that process with the contract and the fundraising right now?
Well, you know, I started a nonprofit corporation called the National Historic Site of Wounded Knee, Inc., and we just set up an office. Just these things are just happening as we speak, so... And we hope to raise the money. I've been on a couple of radio shows in New York City, and we hope to have some local gatherings where we can have fundraisers. There's just a lot of sources that we can go to. One of my friends named Bill Kovich, who used to be the editor of the Atlanta Constitution and was the curator of the Nieman Foundation at Harvard when I was going to school there, he hopes to get a lot of the wealthy newspaper owners together and have a fundraiser in Washington, D.C. So there's a lot of things like that that we're just getting off the ground.
And how much do you anticipate social media helping your cause?
Well, in this day and age, it's a wonder. You know, I'm 81 years old, and so social media is all new to me. Something I really haven't jumped into with both feet, but... It's the thing nowadays. Everybody seems to be able to raise funds through social media.
Right.
And I think we've got a good cause, a good story. And I know we got a lot of responses to the show that I did out of New York City. So
if you get close to that goal, if you achieve the financial goal, then you've secured the purchase. Are you just waiting for the money?
Once we get the money and buy the land from Krasinski, I want to put together a trust fund working with an Oglala Lakota attorney named Mario Gonzalez to put a trust together that we can ensure that land goes into the hands of the tribes of the Great Sioux Nation. And I'm working with some of the elders that are descendants of some of the victims at Wounded Knee, and They kind of feel it. I had lunch with several of them, and it says, they say that it's really time to move on. It's been 125 years, and we'll continue to honor those that died there, but it's time to start honoring the living as well.
And so let's talk about that moving on and go back to what you were saying before about development on the site. Tell us what you're looking at with the cultural or the museum and some historic interpretation.
Well, I think a museum that gives the history of so many of the massacres that occurred throughout the United States, Sand Creek, Washita, Bear Creek, and the hanging of the 38 Lakota warriors at Mankato, Minnesota, those are things that could go into the museum, and I think really show a history of the tragic side of what happened in the development of America. And I think it would be a historic place to really educate not only people in the United States, but I think a lot of the Europeans probably know more about Native American history than some of the people living in South Dakota. They make it a practice because they had a writer of fiction at one time many years ago who wrote a lot of books that were about Native Americans, and they were like comic books. Everybody read them in Europe and became really acquainted with what was going on, more so than we ever did in America. Like I said, we weren't even taught a lot of those things in our own schools here in South Dakota.
So the historic interpretation in this site, as you see it, would that be a collaborative effort between Native and non-Native historians and sort of keepers of those stories? Or would you like to just... Okay.
Yeah. You know, Lori, I think this is probably one of the most opportune times for all South Dakotans to pull together. You know, we started a year of reconciliation, Governor Mickelson and I, 25 years ago. It sort of came to a standstill after Governor Mickelson died in the plane crash. And I think it's it's time for all South Dakotans to start looking at our own history, set things aside and say, we're all human beings. We all need to learn to live together. We all need to unite. And I think this is an opportune time for all South Dakotans to jump in and do something that would help all the Indian tribes in South Dakota, and it'd be very, very beneficial to the people of South Dakota.
What kind of employment and economic impact would you see just the building of this and the operation of it going forward? What would that have on the community surrounding
it? Well, you know,
it?
I think we could get, and I've talked to several people about this, I think we'd get people like the National Park Service to come in and put up the funds to actually build the cultural museum. And that alone would probably provide 25, 30, 40 jobs. I think if we put up a pavilion where people can have booths where they can sell their arts and crafts, where it would be cool in the summer and warm in the winter, and all of the tourists that would come to visit from all over the world, I think it would provide jobs for 100, 200 people that are their own employees. And I think the trading post itself, if constructed, would have 25, 30 employees. So all in all, I think probably over 200 jobs would be created.
And let's go back to that arts pavilion idea. Interesting that you would include artists in this process. What is it about the arts and that you would make sure to include? Why would you do that?
Well, I don't know if you've been down there, Lori, but if you go to the gravesite, you're going to find people that are walking around trying to sell the trinkets and dream catchers and things like that. Then they're out just soliciting whatever tourists that come to visit the site. And I feel they'd be much better served if they had a nice warm place with a booth that where the people could come to them. And we have a lot of people on the reservation that year-round work on their arts and crafts and star quilts and what have you, and they need an outlet for it, and I think that would be an ideal place, a big pavilion where they could actually be called a trade pavilion.
Right. Is this an active cemetery? Are people still buried there today?
No. The gravesite was dug as a trench on December the 29th in 1890, and the bodies were unceremoniously just dumped in the gravesite and covered. And the people had, you know, here's one thing I think a lot of people don't know, that almost all of the people that died at Wounded Knee and are buried in the gravesite there were Minikunju or Hunkpapa, which means they'd be from Cheyenne River or Standing Rock. Only 8 Oglala died at Wounded Knee, according to some of the elders I've spoken to. And they happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. They were there visiting friends. So the majority of all the people that died there are from Standing Rock or Cheyenne River. And I've spoken to some of the people from both of those reservations, and they feel much like I do. It's time for us to start honoring the living also.
Now, it's a $3.9 million land deal, so there has to be some voices in opposition to it. What are you hearing from people who say they have disagreements with this, and what's your response to them?
Well, you know, I think, you know, we're very political people. We have all kinds of different factions on the reservations, and there's always something if you're for that there's going to be people against. And I've heard one person say that I'm in it for the money. Well, you know, I'm 81 years old. I'm comfortable. I have my own house. I have a good family. I'm happy. I don't need any money. So that's out of the question.
So. And now you also mentioned in the 1920s that trading post and 1973, the destruction of that. How do you foresee balancing the occupation of 1973 at Wounded Knee in the historical interpretation of the site going forward?
Well, I think anything could be resolved by sitting down and talking about it. And I was in disagreement with what happened there in 1973, and still am. But as the years have passed, some of my best friends were people who were there. I became very good friends with Vernon Bellacourt and others that were occupiers of Wounded Knee. And so it's just we can put things behind us and we can all move forward. And that's what I was talking about. It's time to move on. And that has to be something that's all inclusive. And while I take 1 second here, Lori, a very good friend of mine who was the former president of the Ogallala Sioux Tribe died this week. His name was Wilbur Between Lodge. And I'd just like to send out my regards to his family.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. I'm sorry for your loss. Tim, where can people go to help out if they want to participate in this project or learn more about it?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. I'm new at fundraising. I hate to toot my own horn here. But we have a post office box at the National Historic Site of Wounded Knee. It's P.O. Box 9344, Rapid City, 57709. And you can also go to www.wounded-knee.com, and you can look at the website and you can see some of the radio shows we've done, listen to some of the radio shows we've done on the topic. You can see a flyover of the grounds itself. And I think that's probably the best way to do it.
Tim Gallego, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate your time.
Well, it's been a real pleasure talking to you, Lori, and welcome to the new job.
Thank you so much. We've been talking with Tim Gallego. You can learn more about his efforts to purchase land near the site of the Wounded Knee Massacre by visiting our website. We'll put a link up there for you after the show. It's sdpb.org/DakotaMidday.